When does unhappiness cross the line into depression? And are there ways to deal with unhappiness that isn't severe enough to need medication?
Our guest tackles those questions in her new book. Shelley Carson is a research psychologist at Harvard University, co-author of Almost Depressed, Is My or My Loved One's Unhappiness a Problem? Shelley, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rob, for inviting me.
So what does it mean to be almost depressed?
Well, almost depressed is a spectrum of mood problems that aren't severe enough to actually be diagnosed as a major depressive disorder, but they're nevertheless interfering with you or someone you care about's ability to savor life or carry out responsibilities at your optimum capacity. So if you think about depression as existing on a continuum with normal ups and downs of mood at one extreme end and full-blown depressive disorder at the other end, then the area that we call almost depressed is that gray space in between. It's not a mental disorder, and you're not incapacitated by it, but you're still not operating at full speed.
And how many of these people who are almost depressed slide into the area of actual depression?
So that's one of the big reasons why we want to emphasize that people should be looking out for almost depressed symptoms. Research shows us that about 75% of people with subclinical symptoms of depression eventually will experience a full-blown depressive episode. And that's very dangerous because people with depression are at 4 times greater risk for heart problems, and they're at between 9 and 15 times greater risk for suicide.
Now, what are some of the symptoms we should be watching out for to know if we're almost depressed, if we're in this continuum?
One of the first things that people should look for is, are you starting to back away from your social engagement? Are you starting to find excuses not to go out with your friends or spend time with family? So this is a symptom of social isolation, which can be a real good indicator that somebody's beginning to feel almost depressed. Another symptom is if things that used to be a lot of fun for you just don't seem like as much fun anymore, or if you're a lot more irritable for a long period of time than you used to be. And finally, if you just feel like you're in a state of the blues or a down state that you just don't seem to be able to kick, these would be signs of almost depression. Oh, and one more that I forgot to mention is if you feel like you're chronically overstressed over a long period of time, this could be a symptom as well.
And how long would these periods last before you sort of sit up and say, yeah, I guess I should start looking at things to do to make myself feel better?
Well, with low-grade depressive symptoms, people can be suffering for months because sometimes the symptoms don't come on right away. You just kind of gradually back into them. And you may not even realize that, hey, the days aren't as happy as they used to be. So I would say this is one of the reasons that we like to get loved ones involved and have everybody keep an eye on each other, because lots of times people who are almost depressed don't realize it for months.
I wanted to ask you about that. If you're seeing these things in a loved one, what's a way to open up that conversation and see if they maybe want to do something about this?
Well, one of the things that I would suggest people say is, gee, you don't seem to be yourself these days. Is something the matter or is something bothering you? That would be one way to enter into the conversation. One of the ways we don't suggest is that you tell people to snap out of it or cheer up because there's nothing to be unhappy about. That usually doesn't work and just tends to irritate people even more. But when you let people know that you're concerned about them and that you've noticed a change in their demeanor or a change in their personality, and that you'd like to help them get to the bottom of it, then people are usually more responsive.
Well, let's get to some of the things that we can do, constructive things. If we've noticed that we're in one of these slumps, we don't want it to slide into something more serious. What's sort of step one toward being healthier and feeling better?
Well, what's really interesting is that when we talk about depression and the whole spectrum of depressive symptoms, there are so many different causes for depression, and they can be biological, psychological, or social in nature. And consequently, There are biological, psychological, and social steps that you can actually take to get out, to feel better. So depression can develop very slowly. And as I said, you can have mild symptoms for years before they become full-blown. But if you can recognize them early, before they become fully developed, you can take some simple actions. And one of the first things that we recommend is make sure you're getting enough exercise. Very busy people, people who are overstressed, will say they just don't have time for exercise. And we've heard every excuse in the book. But the fact of the matter is this. When you physically get your exercise, you are oxygenating your brain. And this is going to actually have an effect on the neurochemicals that produce moods. So it's very important to get exercise. And we recommend at least 3 times a week getting at least 30 minutes of aerobic exercise, plus a little warm-up and cool-down period.
Well, that's kind of a challenge because part of the depression continuum here is you don't want to do stuff. It's hard to maybe get motivated. Is it maybe a taller hurdle than it sounds like even to get a little bit of exercise?
Well, certainly people come up with all kinds of excuses for it. But one of the things that we recommend is that if you feel like you really can't take steps on your own, then you may be more seriously depressed than you think, and you ought to try to get some help from a mental health professional. But usually, just realizing, oh, okay, yes, I am starting to feel some of these symptoms, will motivate people to want to do something about it. And I certainly am one to agree that it's very difficult to fit the exercise in there, but exercise is one of the most natural antidepressants that we have. So I recommend that people start with that. A second thing that people can do is just make sure that you're not constantly just getting through your day and taking care of your work, but try to engage in activities that you find pleasant as well. Try to fit some of those activities into your weekly calendar.
So take care to make sure that there are some things that are bringing you happiness and joy besides just, you know, taking out the laundry or the garbage and doing the laundry.
That's true. And one of the things people can do is even if they don't feel like things are very much fun for them right now, if you write down a list of things that you used to find fun and try to plug a few of those into your calendar, that can be very beneficial. So one of the things you want to make sure is that you're not isolating yourself and you're not staying inside all the time, that you're getting yourself out there. There are other steps that you can also take. One of the ways that I like to tell people to improve their mood is because creativity is one of my areas of research interest. People can express themselves in creative ways and kind of channel that negative energy into creative work. You don't have to be talented to do this. If you just sit down and write out how you're feeling, or get a canvas or just a piece of paper and some paint and slap the paint on and make the paint express how you're feeling at the moment, this creative act is very beneficial in increasing your mood.
I thought that was really interesting to see that. And have you seen that in people? Have you seen examples of people harnessing their creativity to come out of unhappiness?
Absolutely. People use it all the time. So I do a lot of consulting with creative people, and this is the way that they regulate their mood. They regulate their emotions by doing creative work.
We're talking to Shelley Carson. She's a research psychologist. She's co-author of the book Almost Depressed.
And we want to hear from you. What advice do you have on how to deal with depression, unhappiness? Maybe you pulled yourself out of a slide. What techniques did you use to kind of turn things around? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Rob Ferris.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time. We continue our conversation now with Harvard research psychologist Shelley Carson. She's the co-author of the book Almost Depressed.
And we want to hear from you. When you're unhappy, is there something that you do that you rely on to get yourself out of that slide? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email, talk info@wpr.org. Well, Shelley, we've talked some about exercise, about creativity. One thing that I thought was interesting on the psychological side of things was confronting depressive thoughts and reframing them. Can you talk about that a little?
Right. So all of us have a running stream of commentary going through our brains, just a constant verbal thought that we call self-talk. And lots of people don't even listen to what it is they're saying to themselves. But if you stop and listen to the words you're saying to yourself after, for instance, after something negative happens, are you saying things like, oh, you're so stupid, you've done it again, you've messed it up again, you never do anything right, these things always happen to you? If you're saying things like that to yourself, then that is negative self-talk. And we also call that your inner critic. Well, if you let your inner critic take charge of you, you are going to feel very low as far as your mood goes. So one of the things that we suggest is that you actually start monitoring your inner critic or monitoring your self-talk and listen for patterns of negativity that you might find there. Once you find negative thoughts, the goal is to replace them with more positive but realistic thoughts. So you don't want to just be Pollyanna, oh, everything's going to be fine, everything's going to be okay. But what you do want to do is realistically assess things that are going on in your life and then try to decide what would be the best outcome from here and have confidence that you can work toward that outcome. So replacing negative self-talk or your inner critic with positive but realistic self-talk is another way to help yourself feel better. One other thing I wanted to mention is stress. Stress in and of itself isn't a bad thing. We all need a certain amount of stress to motivate us and keep us fulfilled. But when stress becomes overbearing, when you're dealing with either one item of stress that's just too much for you, or more often what happens is that a whole bunch of little stressors will accumulate and you become overstressed, then you just want to yell, stop the world, I want to get off, and you're feeling almost depressed. So I would recommend that people use a stress thermometer. Try to figure out what level of stress feels good to you, and then every once in a while stop and take a stress check. Am I feeling overstressed now? And the overstress that I'm feeling, is it something that's going to resolve soon, or am I just living with this day after day?
Oh, I'm sorry. Let's take a phone call now. I've got a lot of folks waiting to talk to you. We have Greg on the line from Eau Claire. Hi, Greg. Greg, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. I'm sorry. My phone was giving me trouble.
Sure.
Yes, first, I'd like to second one of the things the guest just commented on.
Oh, no. Your phone, Greg. I'm sorry. I think Greg was going to speak to something about the importance of sort of losing yourself in things that you enjoy, I'm assuming. What about that?
Well, definitely losing yourself in something you enjoy, which is sometimes called flow or being in the zone, is a wonderful way to relieve feelings of depression. And one of the ways to do that, going back to stress, is finding things to do that are challenging, but that you feel up to the challenge. So things become stressful and anxiety-provoking when you perceive that you cannot deal with the stress. If you perceive you can deal with it, then threats become a challenge, and dealing with challenges can often lead to a state of flow. So that's a very good, if that was what Greg was going to say, well done, Greg.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you, Greg. Sorry to lose your call.
We'll go to Brandon in Racine now. Brandon, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to ask about?
Well, I guess I was wondering if your guest finds any, as long as a person is manages it correctly and doesn't let it get to that depressive state, do you find that there is any kind of value in sadness? I feel like we've kind of set up this dichotomy between sadness and happiness, or positive and negative. and that negative is always bad and positive is always good. We're so success-oriented in this culture, and we're so goal-driven in this culture that sometimes sadness just happens, I think, you know, because of that. And I think there's some value in that, and there's some value in deepening a person emotionally.
Interesting. Thanks, Brandon. Shelley, what do you make of that?
I think that's a wonderful point, Brandon. A normal emotion has typical ebbs and flows. It's not healthy to feel happy all the time, because sadness is a response to loss. And we can't get through our lives without having losses, major ones, minor ones. And sadness is a result of that, and it's natural and normal to feel sad after a loss. So to try to artificially uplift yourself during a period of sadness isn't necessarily a healthy thing. What's unhealthy, though, is when the sadness lingers longer than one would expect it to after a loss. But I definitely agree with Brandon that sadness and happiness juxtaposed are what makes our emotional lives rich. So definitely there is a place for sadness in our lives.
I want to talk to you about something that's been getting a lot of attention lately. A lot of people are talking about it. There's a growing body of research around meditation and how that might help regulate moods as well. What do you know about meditation and depression?
Well, in fact, we have two chapters that are devoted to mindfulness meditation in our book. And mindfulness meditation in particular is a very good way to deal with worry and rumination, both of which are associated with depressive symptoms. Mindfulness meditation allows you to live in the moment and to observe yourself and your surroundings non-judgmentally. So you are just being in the moment without judging it. And it takes practice and it takes dedication, but once you have mastered this, even to a minor extent, you don't have to be a master meditator in order to get the benefit from it. But learning how to meditate is very beneficial.
We have time for one more caller. Dan is with us in Madison. Dan, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you. One of the things that you asked earlier is how people might consider dealing with depression, and this may not be good for deep depression, but one of the things that I find and a lot of friends find is just being outside in nature. There's something in our genes that connects us intrinsically with nature. There are a lot of groups that actually are looking for volunteers that could be helping. You could be working on restoration projects or just be out hiking. Some people like to be busy with their hands, and you can have a feeling of accomplishment. A little story I'll share is I was out hiking in an area that I take care of, and ran into a very nice woman, and we were talking, and she indicated that she was a geriatric doctor and had to come out because she had some stresses and losses in her profession.
Great. Thanks a lot, Dan. So getting out in nature, Shelley.
We recommend that in our book as well. That's a wonderful point, Dan. Being out in nature and being connected with the world is definitely an antidote for depression. And it's also very good for your creativity as well, I might add. So thank you, Dan, for that call.
Well, thank you much for that, Dan. And, you know, in the last moments here, what do you think about maybe one or two simple tips that someone could start right now if they're feeling depressed?
Well, the first thing, of course, is to make sure you're getting exercise. And if you can exercise outdoors, that's a wonderful thing. A second thing that you might want to check on is your vitamin D level. Vitamin D is associated, lack of vitamin D is associated with depression. And a lot of Americans are suffering from vitamin D deficits. We're also suffering from omega-3 fatty acid deficits. And omega-3 fatty acids have cellular effects on the neurotransmitters in our brain that are associated with mood. So two things I would recommend for people that are very easy to do is get your vitamin D checked and start taking an omega-3 fatty acid supplement. go online and see which ones are the highest quality. And that's something very easy you can do to help your mood.
All right. Shelley, we're all out of time. Thanks for joining us today. That was Shelley Carson, Harvard research psychologist and co-author of Almost Depressed.